I would say that initial piece is when you see something take place in the world and love can be a response to it, you want to get on it. It's called media hijacking. You want to find a colossal situation. You want to hit it on the head and you want to get in front of USA Today, New York Times, CNN, explosively, and the virality that can identify that you're a movement that counteracts the devastation or the situation or the experience. And that would be a way to start to carry the message and then find people that run communities. Like, who has your customer is the bottom line. Who has your customer? Well, humans. Humans are in a very devastated, fucked up place of disconnection. I hope we're using that word today. And the bottom line is you are in the creation of a culture that creates a space of vulnerability, safety, and love as an exchange that gives back. So who needs that? Everybody.
Welcome to the Global Affair Podcast, brought to you by Love Out Loud, the world's largest love-based movement, actualizing a civilization of love by 2030. My name's Nicole Gibson, and join me and some of the world's brightest minds as we bring some of the most important and controversial conversations of our time into a space of unity. It's important to know that as your host, this isn't about my personal opinion or bias, but rather an opportunity to listen with love, honesty, curiosity, and reveal the true universal experience us humans have amongst the differences. So if you love the show, please let us know by giving us a rating and tell us how to make this conversation easier for other people to jump into as well. And with that, let's get it. Welcome to the Global Affair special episode, also still hosted live at Laguna Beach in Sana's beautiful house. You met her on the last episode, and we're back to talk about the future of marketing because the community in Laguna is just thriving. I'm so happy that Love Out Loud is finding a home here. And I have a sense that, you know, you guys are going to do a much better job of explaining your genius if we simply just go around the table and give a bit of context before we launch into the conversation. Amber.
Ooh. My name is Amber Hartnell, and I am the founder of the Temple of Wholeness. And we are an organization that is essentially devoted to creating conditions, experiences, and education that supports people to peel back the layers they've accumulated that keep them from accessing their true essential nature. So with that, we're working with transmuting trauma, PTSD, stress, all of that, and bringing people into that direct connection with who and what they are beyond this protective personality skin that most relate through.
Love it. And to give the context of marketing specifically, maybe just sharing some of your off-the-cuff thoughts about marketing, some of the, I guess, intentions you have in your own marketing as you move forward.
Yeah, we were in this conversation prior to starting this conversation here. I am not in the field of marketing. I don't have experience in marketing. I've kind of accidentally found myself becoming a viral sensation numerous times in my life, for instance, giving birth. So
we can talk about that.
Yeah, we can dive into all of that. So within that, I'm here to learn how we can actually utilize marketing in a way that can allow us to expand and deliver the message and what we're here to bring forward without compromising integrity and the substance of what we're here to bring.
I love that. And I really love that you're intending to come into this conversation to learn. And I think that's really at the essence of why we want to have these roundtable discussions, because we're exploring in the moment. So I love that. Thank you, Amber. Dim.
Who are you?
Yeah. The greatest existential question of all time, Tim. All right, you got 30 seconds.
I'm Timothy J. Ruppel, and I believe that when it comes to marketing, a lot of people will sell themselves, and so they lose their audience pretty quickly, especially when they're in a particular field for a long time. They don't adopt, and what got them to where they're at, what's getting them to the next, is no longer a path that can be pursued as it once was. Like marketing, just 3 years ago, was a totally different world as we went into COVID. Coming out of COVID, it was a whole new thing to get people into the internet and from the internet into their stores. And now they're flipping back again to getting subscriptions and getting people into AI and AI funnels. And so the world of marketing has definitely flipped on its head very quickly. And it's just the beginning.
Okay. The baton's passed to me. Okay. Well, I have an interesting story. I haven't had a digital footprint in 8 years. That's been intentional. So I haven't been on social media. I don't have a Instagram profile. I haven't had Facebook. Just launched my LinkedIn. And part of that desire was to be able to, if I do, but you know, if I choose to be datafied, is to one, be able to own my digital likeness. And the second part is to really be intentional with my digital footprint. So I'm here to learn as to like how to curate that and like just really be purposeful with my digital footprint.
Cool.
And then Peter.
Hi, my name is Peter Kell. I specialize in an art called video sales letters. It's how do you create a video that inspires people to solve their problems today? Spent the last 6 years doing this activity in just basically only this activity in particular. And it's all designed to be used for high volume media buying on Facebook ads, TikTok ads, and YouTube ads in order to create explosive growth inside of those companies and allow them to scale. Yeah. So in terms of marketing, like if a business is designed to solve somebody's problem, right? Marketing is inspiring somebody to solve that problem today. That's the part of getting someone to take action, which I believe is one of the most important parts.
Peter, you're working on some very incredible revolutionary tech. You were sharing it with us last night when we were all hanging out. And I think it would be brilliant just for the context of the conversation to introduce the thinking behind the technology and maybe just at a high level, we can get into it more deeply, how that's going to revolutionize marketing in the future.
Yeah, for sure. So for everyone who isn't looking at AI, it's basically going to completely revolutionize anything that is creative driven, that inspires people, that anything that has to have somebody do any creative task, AI can do way better and way faster than we can. So a lot of my career really took off after my mentors taught me the secret of modeling winning campaigns. They're like, really, you're not smart enough to kind of figure this out on your own. Stop trying to create winning campaigns. Just like, here's a list of a bunch of winning campaigns. Start rewriting them. So I gathered this like swipe file. And for the next years, it's been me waking up, squeezing my brain, trying to be creative and try to understand how to like take this new product and sell it in the framework of this winning campaign. And that's been very, very effective. But when I opened a kind of school and started training people, I found that, you know, there was some big skill barrier still. You know, it became a little easier for me to do this. But for my students, it would take 2.5 weeks to write a script. It would take, you know, a lot of brain power. They have to get up to speed. They're second guessing themselves. It costs them a lot of money. So naturally, the implication was like, hey, I wonder if AI could really help with this task. I wonder if we could train AI on you, your story, your product, your testimonials, everything about what you're doing. And then if I could just train it on my big old swipe file of winning campaigns that have done like, you know, 8 figures, $100 million plus in sales off these winning campaigns, I wonder if AI can just rewrite these instantly for anybody. And, you know, it was definitely like kind of a crazy hurdle to think about. And then, you know, we did some tests and it seemed like it was very viable and not a lot of things was kind of working out for us. But then one day on like a coaching call, one of my students was like, hey, you try adding this to your little prompt formula. And then that was just like the game changer that just made it all like, well, I could sell anything now in like 2 seconds. Yeah. Like what used to take me weeks of squeezing my brain just is now happening in an instant. Yeah.
Perfect.
This is crazy. Yeah. So that opened up a crazy world, which I mean, we're just going to evolve into the craziest world. And advertising is going to be completely revolutionized with AI, 100%.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for that context. And I think let's keep setting the context a bit deeper. So Amber, you said you've accidentally been thrust into fame multiple times. And Peter, you also shared that your whole work is about not needing to depend on the chance of virality. So I think these are two very kind of interesting perspectives. Amber, do you want to share it a bit about how that happened for you? How do you get thrust into fame accidentally?
Well, the most significant thrust. It's funny, it all started with a thrust. The thrust that made the baby, which I then birthed in a way that was ecstatic, orgasmic. And so we filmed this birth, this water birth that I had behind my home in Hawaii, never with the intention of sharing it with anybody outside of our family. And through a series of events that occurred 2 months after I gave birth, I was connecting with a woman who was creating a documentary on conscious birth and water birth in particular. And so she asked me to share the story about my birth. And as I began to share it with her, she stopped. She said, do you mind if I just film you while I'm interviewing you here? And I said, sure. So it started with that. And then it evolved into her requesting to utilize my footage for her documentary, which she had been stalled in completing. So as I tuned into that, because the idea of sharing the footage of the most intimate and vulnerable moment of my life with perfect strangers definitely took me aback. But as I tuned in, I got a really clear message that if only one baby could be born through a mother who was empowered because she received this, then it's worth it. So I said yes, never anticipating it would be shown bigger than midwives sharing with expecting parents. And much to my surprise, that documentary became a sweeper. It's in 57, 58 countries, dubbed in 17 languages. Wow. I started getting thousands of letters from women all around the world sharing their experience with me. So then that led to another documentary, ABC News 2020, and it spread like wildfire and was surprising to me. It was not a subject matter that was really in the collective conversation until this documentary came up. So I got thrust in that position and being asked to go on all the big talk shows and interviews. I honestly said no to all of them except for the ABC News 2020. And part of it was, well, first of all, I wasn't looking for fame. I didn't ask for it. I didn't want it. Mm. I really wanted to be present with my family, raising my children. So even though I began to say yes, I realized I couldn't manage the amount of energy and attention that was coming my way with it. So I just stopped it in its tracks as far as me showing up. And now this harkens back to a conversation. I'm curious because I'm continually requested to share and to share the information, the practices, what's been cultivated. And I haven't known how to step up and share it in a way where I'm not compromising in the integrity and the substance. Mm. But I also feel like I'm doing a disservice to the people who are asking for it and I'm not delivering. So it's an interesting moment to be in, which is why I'm so excited to learn from this conversation.
Right. Yeah. It's the curse of having a life-changing product.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You're really selfish if you're not trying to get it out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I just want to just acknowledge, you know, thank you for coming on The Global Affair. Thank you for trusting this process. And I really, you know, my intent to, as far as I can control, is that these conversations really enable ways of being and moving in the world that maybe weren't thought of prior to these kind of conversations. And I know sometimes you share a similar sentiment for roundtable discussions.
Yeah.
What's really fascinating about this kind of dynamic in these two perspectives that you both hold, Amber and Peter, is integrity in marketing is clearly something that would be really of the utmost importance to you, right, and Amber. And the way you went viral is by capturing yourself or having someone capture you in this kind of purest, most vulnerable state of being. And it was the essence of that that allowed that spread, that frequency to kind of permeate into, fame. Yeah. And your thoughts, Peter, around just not relying on virality in order to sell a product. What are your kind of high-level thoughts on the bridge between that way of thinking about marketing and maybe what Amber's experience?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely uber successful people who have done it organically. And I think even the most successful people are the organic ones, right? But a lot of times the free traffic model, which is what it's also called, is very saturated and very difficult to break through. So I chose to go the paid route, right? Pay to play kind of thing. If you could spend $100 on advertising your product and you can get $200 in sales, you can go what I call batshit nuclear, right? Because you can really... You just got money back.
Term.
You can put it back in.
Yeah.
Get money back and you put it back in, right? You can scale really way faster. You can make 10-year businessmen look like they're running a lemonade stand because your advertising campaigns go so big, right? So you can just achieve some really crazy things just from playing that single game of how do I create a video that inspires somebody to sign up today?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and interested to hear your perspectives, Tim and Sanaz, on this.
Yeah, at least for me, I remember, by the way, watching your video, and it was like just completely, I can't forget the image. It was one of the most profound videos I've ever seen. And so, and just in terms of for me, just like my personal journey is I really want to engage in storytelling. I don't want to engage in marketing. So I'm curious now with like certain, you know, generative AI tools, how I can shift with not marketing, but just like effective storytelling. And like, what are some of the, you know, secrets around that? Or how do I cultivate that organically? It's like, that's something I'd really love to learn from you, Peter.
Yeah. So, I mean, I use storytelling simply because it is the most effective form of advertising, right? You're either lecturing at somebody and talking at somebody, or you're telling them a nice story, right? It has the lesson kind of built in. And of course, stories are very powerful from like a hypnotic element, because you can sneak past the subconscious mind and drop little suggestive hints about whatever you want. So it's much more of a powerful tool. But I mean, regardless, what is most important is that the viewer is inspired to take action today and is inspired to not be left in the same space that they started before they saw this video. So whatever it takes to get them to move, especially if you have a life-changing product, it's literally your duty.
What are your thoughts on attention spans? Like
that's a complete myth for sure.
Really?
I mean, people will binge watch 8-hour documentaries. So the thing is, like, people are scrolling to look for something,
right?
To look for something that captivates them. And, you know, one of the hardest parts about when I like came into Mindvalley was just trying to convince them that I wanted to take their 2-minute ads and make them 40-minute ads. Really? Right.
Your idea.
Yeah.
I was like, guys, I know this is crazy. Trust me, I don't want to make a 40-minute ad either, right? But what I want us to do is go bash a nuclear. So this is what we need to do. And no one ever watches it. It's too long. Yeah. The attention spans are too short. But it is the most highest scale campaigns in the world are long form advertisements.
So it's a myth that we're
100%.
Sure. Like, we do have, our attention span is decreasing. But like, most of the times when I talk to marketing agencies and I have been shopping around for such a long time, I just haven't found one that resonate with until recently. But it's almost like, no, we can't. It's too long. You know, people have an attention of a goldfish. Things need to be like on TikTok. They need to be quick. And I'm just like, that doesn't resonate with me. I don't think that my audience is, I don't need a mass audience. I just want a niche audience, like true viewership and true engagement. I'm so happy that that's just on the back end. Like, that's just kind of just a myth.
Yeah, it's a total myth. I mean, for the most effective advertising, it has to do with how expensive your price point is, right? If your price point and your average order value is, I would say, less than, $70 or $100, then your sweet spot is going to be within 2 to 5 minutes, right? But just to think that you can inspire
really, someone. Really, there's a correlation between price point and length of time.
100%, yes. Mm. And how long your VSL you can get away with, a really big campaign. Right. If you're selling like a $39 product, you can get away with a 5-minute long video and do very, very well with it. Right. But as soon as the price point goes into the $100, $200 range, right, $300 range, then you need the full story. Right. People want to know everything about what just happened here. All the biggest supplement VSLs, which are some of the biggest campaigns online, are supplements, are, an hour long, 50 minutes long. And you can see dozens and dozens of them, right? They dominate all the other guys doing short form videos, for sure. Yeah, people have a real problem, and if a real problem, they're captivated.
Yeah,
One of the things with copywriting in general is like, who's going to read this? Is what everybody says. But if someone has this problem, they will read every word on the page, and they will watch every single thing because they're like going to solve this today.
How often do you feel that the lack of clarity in a marketing strategy is directly and only correlated to the product owner or the founder's absence of clarity of the problem they're trying to solve? Like, have you seen it's just basically synonymous? Like, it's always related to that absence of clarity, or are there elements of kind of
the struggle with marketing?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more to it than just knowing what the product is, the problem is that we're solving, right? I would say the number one reason why people...
But knowing it intimately enough to be able to convey it and communicate it,
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot to it. I think that's one of the biggest breakdowns when you come to a technical product between the company owner and the marketer, because a lot of times the marketer is learning something. Like right now, one of the companies I work with just went to a new marketing firm. And they are unfamiliar with the ability to how to communicate the product. And our previous marketing entire experience was 55-year-old and older females. And now we're human agnostic. So as we became a human agnostic product, we're increasing people's ability to perform at sports, hit their full all-time PRs, and increase their ability to stand and carry balance and cognition. And with these benefits, the marketer's like, oh, we don't know where to start. And so I think that clarity has a direct correlation with the ability to transfer people from a potential buyer to a buyer in a big way. And a lot of times the breakdown in communication is between the founding individual, the passionate team that creates it, yeah, and then the person trying to deploy it to the masses, because that's where an expert can notice this is going to work and this isn't going to work. This language pattern, this technical detail is what's missing. And I see that big time right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really like taking everything about your product and your story and the way it was founded and the problems that it solves and the root cause of the problem that no one's discovered yet that we've figured out and the techniques we've done to solve that, and wrapped it all into a system you can buy today and put that whole thing into a story that just feels like you're rolling down a water slide, you know, super just sliding along and you're trapped in this story and you can't escape, right? Is kind of how these things are designed. So there's a lot to it. It's like a full symphony in a sense, you know, I mean, it's a whole conduction that, especially when they're 45 minutes long, you know, it's like, seriously, yeah. It's everything is a one-stop shop for someone to learn everything about your product and get emotional enough to decide to take action today and call them to action.
We have a conference coming up next year, and as we're integrating vendors, I'm telling them, I want you to have three QR codes. One will be a 30-second overview. Here's a cup of coffee. This is strong coffee. It makes you stronger. It has minerals, has nutrients, has benefits, right? And then the next thing is, man, I want to learn more. Well, here's the mineral. Here's what the mineral's been known to do. And so the first QR code is 30-second integration. It's a quick little blip. It's a snapshot. It's an overview. The next one is 6 to 8, maybe 10 minutes, giving them the type of minerals, what it's done, people's, feedback. And then the next one is 45 minutes. It's, I'm the person that needs to know everything. You know, how long has it been in the market? What other places is it used and all the details? That way, the average customer gets touched in that moment, because when you're at a booth and when you're interacting with people in a live setting for marketing, you get burnt out telling the same story 300 times. And that will give the ability for that person to multiply themselves. So if there are 5,000 people in attendance at that event, you're not sitting there completely burnt out in moments. You're able to say, hey, you know, what is your question? Okay, great. Have you seen the 30-second video? Watch that real quick and come back with a better question. That way you're educating your consumer as quickly as possible, and then you're evolving their question, because we only get answers the quality of our question. We can direct our consumer to come back with us saying, this is more specifically what I'm asking for. We're able to save time, save energy, and become way more efficient in communication.
You know, in that case, like an application of a digital avatar representative would be interesting.
Yeah, so literally just
gonna have like a setup with a digital avatar where I'm like, all right, you know what, I'm gonna ask you some questions about this right now.
FAQ setup.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, after they watch this video, they should have no more questions except buy-in, right? It is to remove. If they did 10,000 hours of research and learned everything about you and decided to buy, right, you are crunching that down into one video that they can watch. That just takes...
What is the price point of the products you are selling with that strategy, the 40-minute strategy, generally speaking?
Right. So,
Because if you tell me $100, I'm going to lose my mind.
No, so we were selling Mindvalley. So it was a $79 per month product, or it had a $399 a year.
A subscription,
offer. Yeah. So it's $400 a year, right? So it's a lot. So people needed the full story, and people need to like understand everything about it at scale. And believe me, I wish I could create shorter videos. I didn't wake up wanting to create long videos that I just have to throw in the trash if it doesn't work, right?
Because you're essentially creating a like docu-series every single time.
Yeah, it's basically a documentary every single time.
And I like that like just aspect going forward. Like I'm currently a co-producer in a couple different documentaries, and like just that's the way that I see like storytelling, and also being able to capture things, because I think documentaries capture ideas in time, and it's just can be used to archive. There is a sincerity to it, and so again, I think that that's like I really love that approach to just creating like a library of docuseries.
Yeah. When I sold my skincare brand, I was like going to get into documentaries. I was like, I'm done with VSLs. I'm going to get into documentaries, and I'm playing around in the space. I'm like, wait, this kind of space, like I have to pray to God it goes viral. I have to pray to God Netflix buys me, and it takes like months for me to shoot this thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, with VSLs, you don't need to go viral. It makes money right away, and it actually gets people to take action. Documentaries, they just change the channel. We'll go watch another thing. Personally, that's what I felt. I liked advertising because now they put skin in the game, which is the real moment somebody transforms, because they took a new action they never took before. Mm. and they invested in themselves.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, we just,
So I went back into BSLs.
I'm an executive producer on The Cost of Convenience, and it's a documentary that's looking at the digitization of humanity and where we're going, looking at data sovereignty, digital addiction. And, you know, we've had the networks look at it. We've had HBO, Amazon, Netflix, and they think it's brilliant, but they don't know how to market it, you know, because how do you, you know, what is the strategy on like talking to people about data sovereignty and their human rights being violated? So
the real thinking there is, how do we make sure that we're not promoting our own redundancy?
Exactly. Yeah. And so we're developing the strategy right now for Cost of Convenience to go direct to consumer.
Yep.
Because I think that, you know, it should be part of essential education. But, you know, we've had a hard time with, you know, different production partners and the networks trying to figure out what's the best way to market that.
Yeah, there has been a very successful online docuseries called The Truth About Cancer. And
yeah.
They've scaled out to a bunch of different companies. And I believe they give like the first episode for free and they release it once a day. But if you want to watch it all, then you have to buy it. So it's this drip campaign that you can get quicker if you buy it.
That's interesting.
And I think that was a very successful. I think they're like $20 million in sales or something around that. But that's a good, that's the most successful online docuseries case study there is.
Yeah, because we have educational components. You know, after watching the film, if you are a parent and you're wanting to teach your children about, you know, responsible digital technology, you know, just responsible use of their devices. So I think I find that interesting. I think the only other model for that has been The Secret, where there is like an educational or module course attached to it. But as far as anything else, do you know any other films or documentaries that have had an educational element that's attached to, like, after you watch a film, you can now access the educational content right away and purchase that?
Yeah, I mean, that's every single online course program.
But right? With a documentary?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like what a VSL kind of is, right? It gets someone to inspire someone to go watch my videos behind my paywall.
Okay.
Right, essentially, it's just, but like Mindvalley is just, I'm inspiring people to go take the courses on program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like kind of it, right? I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm learning.
That's evolution. But it's very specific, right? It's like we have a program. We need to sell it. We need to inspire people to take it. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would love, for the purposes of educating our listeners, to actually go back to the fundamentals of marketing and let's build up the conversation from there. So if you, to anyone, but maybe Peter, you're kind of the point of qualification on the subject in the conversation. Where did the need for marketing originally arise? How has that evolved over time to now? And then we can move the conversation into the future of marketing.
Right. So, I mean, my definition of marketing is inspiring somebody to solve their problem today. That's what really works for me. Right. That really vibes for me, because now that I'm coming at it from that frame, it's like there are people struggling with a problem and my job is to save them, help them do something with their life, help them stop with the suffering, because
really
the problem equals
marketing.
100%. But people only buy solutions to their problems. Right. Yeah. And at a deep level, they're emotionally unsatisfied. Maybe they're embarrassed or feeling X, Y, Z painful feelings. And those feelings are the reasons why we're drive to move. So there is like a stable, subtle line at the lowest level of and a issue, even if you don't have a pen and you need to get a pen, right? It's frustrating, right? That frustration is why
you just sick of those goddamn borrowers.
Buying a pen, right? So people build products and it's their job to inspire people to, you know, solve the problem that their product solves. And I think that's to me the fundamental of marketing, is everything is designed to inspire someone to solve their problem today.
And the intricacies of like the understanding of marketing, obviously that's exponentially increased in sophistication as the decades have gone by. You look at advertisements from, I don't know, the 50s, and it's like Johnson and Son, you know, selling their shampoo bottle, and it's so literal, you know, buy this shampoo today. and now, you know, our campaigns, the intricacy of thought is quite amazing. Like, I've always kind of thought marketing and fashion rule the world in terms of industry reach and understanding human behavior. So do you know much about the sort of evolution of marketing?
100%. So you're talking about it's called market sophistication levels is what you're talking about. So I mean, on a short term, it's broken down in a book called Breakthrough Advertising. And in a simple way, it's, you know, back when there was no weight loss supplements ever, pills ever, you could just be like, you can lose weight. Okay, I want to do it. A bunch of people try it, right? And then a bunch of people try it, and then it doesn't really work for them, right? So that's when things evolved into market sophistication level two, where I can't really say I lose weight anymore. It doesn't really work. So the question is like, you know, how can you kind of lose weight? And that's when this thing called mechanisms show up. And mechanisms are basically how anyone can be at the bleeding edge of any industry or any niche is by being at the bleeding edge of mechanisms, which is the root cause of the problem. So if I say you can't lose weight, oh, it's because your metabolism's slow. Now we're talking about advertising as slow metabolism, right? And then that's, oh, that kind of makes sense. That's why I can't lose weight. So now we have this pineapple from the Himalayas that's able to increase your metabolism so that you can lose weight. See, it kind of connects the dots there. And then that enables somebody to like, that's a new level. So that advertising begins to open up the work. And then it kind of continues like that, where that gets kind of burnt out or something like that. And then—
And is that usually due to a lack of trust?
Is it due to lack of trust?
The product or whatever hasn't proven itself. So therefore the trust breaks down. You've got to kind of elaborate.
Well, it's just like, that's it on a very advanced level. It just reels really deep with that because it's just marketers constantly like pushing these specific angles.
So also saturation.
And it begins to saturate.
Desensitization.
Correct. So what begins to work is almost like digging deeper down the rabbit hole for the specific person, right? So even for something like type 2 diabetes, for someone who's brand new, they don't know that like their pancreas is one of the root causes of the issue there. And for someone who does know, they need like a more descriptive, you know, reason of why their pancreas is stuck in a certain mode and can't switch to another mode.
Talk us through your process of how you analyze kind of the questions you ask, the frameworks you use to analyze the market fit, the level of sophistication of the person that you're trying to market to.
100%. So step one is like everything has been so figured out in advertising. There are so many people on this planet. There are so many advertisers on this planet. Step one is always going on spy tools and researching who are the biggest players in my niche, right? What are the biggest players? If I'm going into osteoporosis, for example, I want to know what words work the best in that place. I pull up a thing called YouTube. I type in osteoporosis and I ask, what's the greatest video ever made on osteoporosis? Right? Most viewed video ever. What's in the headline? Is it like, is it low bone density? Is like, was that what they're talking about? Right? Whatever words are in those headlines and whatever words are in the first three sentences of that video, whatever's in the thumbnail is all currently the most effective way to inspire attention from people with osteoporosis, as proven by organic search and social.
Yeah.
So those kind of things are, that's where you get your foundation, you know, wording from. But after that, it's the spy tools and the actual people who put money behind the advertising and decide what's been the biggest campaigns that have worked, what they have in common. So for sure, it starts with like, you know, okay, I've never sold anything with osteoporosis, so I need to go study the best guys in osteoporosis. So it begins with studying the grace. And it begins with recognizing that if there are no competitors, that likely means you're going to die.
Yeah. So this is kind of this is my question, right? Yeah. So Love Out, people historically that I've bought into market Love Out Loud have had a very difficult time with us as a plan. And I think it's because it's, you know, it's a conceptual framework for starters. love arguably is the solution for many problems. So how do you really narrow that down? And that's kind of the promise of the movement as well. A more loving world solves many of the challenges we face as a human race. So how do you get granularity around that? I mean, one of the things that I've definitely come to is storytelling is the most compelling way to at least build a community around us and an audience around us that believe in what we're doing. And I've found kind of the products and services that we've built have actually been more organic response to their requests. So it's been this really kind of unusual experience of marketing for us. So just out of curiosity, a client like us that's not necessarily selling osteoporosis pills, where they can look to a market and be like, okay, you know, we're kind of looking to like Aristotle. Like, we're kind of like, who are the greatest philosophers of all time? How do they convey a message that lasts a millennia? and then trying to package that into into a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
Any challenge.
Yeah.
So like, how do you do that? Is that what you're saying?
Just your take on that. Yeah. How would you break that down? What would you type into YouTube? I'm going to take notes.
If we're selling, for example, like watches that track health data.
No, let's do, because it's a bit more challenging. Love Out Loud is a broad movement. So, you know, success to us would be having someone join our community.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I am an advertiser, right? So I hit the advertising head with my hammer, right? I have an advertising hammer. I'm one of those guys who just, if you ask me a question about ads, I'm going to be like, ads, push ads, right? So step one is you have to create a product that generates revenue in order to scale. This doesn't work. This only my strategy only works because I can make more money back on my ads than I'm spending, which creates this viral, you don't need to go viral, right? You are now just, you can recycle the money back into ads at the biggest scale. So step one is like really getting people to put skin in the game. That way you can reach the world in a big way, or else you're relying on virality and you're relying on, you know, slower movements of building a real like stable brand that just, I don't have the patience for, you know, so like moving fast. So this is the fast play.
Yeah.
So I know you have an event coming up soon. One of the strategies that we brought to the table, helping another digital event come to the table, was they wanted an A-list celebrity. And they went to the A-list celebrity and they said, it's $1 million for us to be on for about an hour over those 2 days, 15 minutes, 45 minutes. 15 minutes is a pep session. 45 minutes is a little bit more of a deep dive on whatever topic you find fit. And so the group said, hey, we don't have $1 million budget. We're really hoping that they come on board. They basically ended the call. And I said, schedule another call. And I was really busy with some other things. 8 hours later, the next day, I get on the call and I said, hey, I'm sorry, you guys wanted $1 million. We're actually hoping to pay you $2 million, but I was curious about some other things. The entire team leaned in, literally. I mean, there's six people on the Zoom call, four of them leaned in like, you want to what? And so what we did is we stepped back from it and we said, how do we get the audience that will bring it in? So who has my customer? So if we step away from the paid ads, it's who has my customer. That particular A-list figure had the customer. And so what's that?
Governments.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So how do you add value there? So what we did is we turned around and we said, here's the ticket price. Your audience is this big. You could convert 3%, right? And they're like, oh, we convert 10. I was like, then if we give you at that math, 70%, we'll pay you $2.5 million to engage with this audience. And they just sat there. And this is the first time they'd ever taken a 90% commission on digital sales. And they did over $1 million in sales. They got paid. They were ecstatic. It came closer to their charge rate than their benefit rate. However, the deal went through. Previous to that, the deal was dead because the client didn't have $1 million and the A-lister was stuck on that. So
structure has so much to do with it.
That comes on. That's one of the bottom lines of everything from a VSL to the brochures that I have to everybody else's experience. If somebody finds a framework that creates a conversion, that creates value, that's the bottom line. It's all about rapport and value. So when you ask Peter, I would say that the question needs refined as to what vertical or what leg or what section of LOL you're focusing on to get the question you're looking for.
Yeah, I guess like one of the things that we've kind of had to come to is we're only using this sort of granularity of thinking, like we have to get focused specifically on one product, means that we're never really able to introduce Love Out Loud in its entirety. We have to bring people into the individual programs or events that we're doing, then expose them to the movement, which, you know, is fine. But I was just curious if there was a perspective that maybe we haven't tried that allows kind of the grandeur of the mission to really shine without seeming like it just kind of falls flat because it's not speaking enough to a specific personalized pain point of an individual.
Yeah.
I mean, musicians do this, I feel. You know, there's a unified quality that unifies people in music. So it's possible. I just don't see it in company marketing much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've committed my life to one single skill set, which is like fusing videos that convert with advertising, you know? So that it's like, so if we're not selling something,
I would say that initial piece is when you see something take place in the world and love can be a response to it, you want to get on it. It's called media hijacking. You want to find a colossal situation. You want to hit it on the head and you want to get in front of USA Today, New York Times, CNN, explosively, and the virality that can identify that you're a movement that counteracts the devastation or the situation or the experience. And that would be a way to start to carry the message and then find people that run communities. Like, who has your customer is the bottom line. Who has your customer? Well, humans. Humans are in a very devastated, fucked up place of disconnection. I hope we're using that word today. And the bottom line is you are in the creation of a culture that creates a space of vulnerability, safety, and love as an exchange that gives back. So who needs that? Everybody. And the question is, what situation will bring a person to the point of admitting that they need that? Like, I literally personally have coached people for 20 years and got challenged by an individual that we mentioned earlier, Carlos. And he's like, the other night you spoke so profoundly, so charismatically, you captured everybody in there. There were titans in the room. And he goes, why aren't you on social? And I was like, and I didn't have a response. So I realized that I had to be a customer myself. And I had to reinvent the way that I look at things. And it steps me back to say, if I'm trying to create a movement, who has my customer? And that's everything you're looking for. Who has your customer? Who has the world? Who has it captured? So when the next devastating situation takes place, be one of the funnels that receive information and donations, like support a Red Cross or whatever it is. Create your own space there to do something and have an impact. So if you have a culture and you have a community, put them to work in a direction. So if a hurricane hits, go clean it up. If an earthquake hits, go clean it up. If fire hits, take water, like those type of things.
Interestingly, our biggest campaign ever was 100,000 person meditation that we did at the start of COVID. And it was a direct response to the fear in the media. We created a campaign called Meditate for Love. And within 4 days, we had some of the leading spiritual voices. Just literally, it was like a vortex we created because it was so topical that they just showed up.
So the beauty is, you know, the framework of how to get your customer. You just said this is a formula that worked in a big way and had impact. So step back from that and say, how do I do this again? How do I do this 2.0? So you can go back and revisit those spiritual people and do an annual thing, do a second thing. It doesn't always have to be new, bigger, badder, better. It can simply be, this worked. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. So I would say go back to those spiritual people and say, I'd like to revisit this. That was 8 months ago on Tuesday. And then you start to comment on all those posts that had the engagement. Yep. Now you have 250,000 people. So you just added six figures of eyeballs, and that's incredibly powerful and low hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm like, really love to learn more about what you're creating with the Temple of Wholeness, and what are some of the challenges or opportunities that you're currently looking at in terms of expanding, you know, just attention and cultivating that digital presence for that venture?
It's a good question, and it's very much on the table right now. As I mentioned earlier, I think in one of our conversations, I too haven't been on social media for, I think, about 4 years at this point, and it had been...
Was that a conscious decision?
It was a conscious decision, and I was slowly extracting myself out before that point, and I think I went on a couple times in the beginning, first year of the pandemic, just to kind of get a pulse of what was going on out there. And, you know, I found it so hard to maintain my center, my connection, my hope for humanity when I would go on there. Like, I would feel really disenfranchised by everything that I saw. And one of the things about it, too, it seems like it's promoted an epidemic of narcissism, which is something I'm very sensitive to. And no part of me has wanted to contribute towards that.
Well, like a me-centric.
Yes, very much
culture.
So.
Yes.
Self-aggrandizing.
Influencer culture, me. And pay attention to me. I want your eyeballs.
Influencer.
Yeah. So that being said.
We should be about.
Yeah, well.
Because if you have life-changing stuff.
Well, let's get into the nuances of of that conversation.
Yeah. Well, that's correct. And that's really what I'm transitioning into is... I'm not in that category. I know my motivation, where I move from. I've devoted my life to service for decades now at this point. I'm not trying to get attention. In fact, every time that I've been put in that position where there's a huge amount of attention, I've backed away from it for various reasons. And a lot of it was honestly around being integrity with my mothering. So now that my boys are old enough, 13 and almost 18, I have the bandwidth, the availability. And so there's receptivity to open into a digital presence. And yet this is what I'm interested in these conversations is how to do that in a way that makes sense, that isn't going to deplete me, that I don't actually even have to be on it, that there's others who are managing that, but that I can produce content, I can share the message that's being asked for. Because that's, for me, it's about responding to the request, right? It's not just me deciding I want to do something. So many people have been reaching out wanting more of what I have to offer. So it's, again, harkens back to what you're saying about meeting that need and not being selfish with what I've cultivated. I've been kind of holding back from the world unintentionally just because I didn't know how to manage that. So there's a lot of unknown. I'm working with a team of people and bringing more people on about how to do that in a smart way that makes sense, that again is going to maintain the integrity of this, of the transmission all the way through, and grow that audience and allow people to find us. So the question is, I don't know yet.
I've got
more skilled people around me in that domain who are helping to create a strategy.
I was also just also curious about what the Temple of Wholeness is about and what you're looking to build here. And it's local to Encinitas, correct?
Well, this is where we've founded it. But the vision, I mean, it's a big, grand vision as well. And we'll essentially be creating a global network of temples, regenerative communities, retreat centers that are sanctuary spaces that are living, breathing models of what's possible when we integrate these various generative technologies, the life-giving technologies, the way that we can govern, the way that we interact with each other, communicate, and also natural plant medicine technologies that can help us to efficiently process a huge amount of trauma that collectively we're caring for and has continued to create such great distortion on our planet as an extension of what's not been processed within our system. So that's one of the primary elements, is creating not only the sanctuaries, but the proper conditions of coherence that allow one to come into the experience of safety.
Really?
So that they can actually know their wholeness and be engaged in the process of peeling back those identity structures, the traumas, the imprints that have been carried forward that keep one from accessing what's most true about who they are. And knowing that when we do that, we come into alignment with who we are, with our original divine blueprint, that we are naturally compelled to pick up the tools of our trade, what's embedded within us, the innate gifts that we came to bring forward, and to contribute them to making the more beautiful world that we know is possible.
One more thing I'm curious about, Peter, is are there successful strategies for cross-promotion, for organizations cross-promoting each other?
I'm sure there's plenty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Right.
Yeah.
It's not my expertise, though.
Asked Peter for video based.
I just say, in my lane, pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I just believe in just speaking on only things you really know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So that's what I believe in. Yeah.
I like the long form storytelling format. To me, that's actually what resonates. Because that short attention span, the lack of substance and depth is not interesting, and it wouldn't do it, right? So I'm leaning towards picking up what you're putting down.
Talk us through the process, Peter, because I know Mind Valley, pretty well, and I know the company pretty well. I've spoken for them. I can imagine that it would have been a pretty hard sell to say, hey, let's go from 2-minute advertising videos to 40-minute, micro documentaries to sell this product. Did you have to build the infrastructure for that basically from scratch to sort of support your thinking, or did you get it from somewhere? Well, where did the 40 minutes come from, and how did you build that out, and how could we apply that in our various businesses?
It came from because I had done TSLs for the last 4 years before that. So through my experience of selling more and more and more, eventually we got to long 20 minute and then 40 minute ads that just caused a skincare brand that I had to just go really boom real fast until I sold it.
So that was the strategy.
I have spent way more than you guys.
Yeah.
So let's just get straight to the point here. This is what we have to create. Yeah. Everyone that's complaining has never spent any significant money on ads. So that's the problem. A lot of the secrets are very counterintuitive for sure. So now your question says, how do you begin to put one of these together?
Yeah. Your process of scoping out a really epic 40-minute sales video.
Right. So, I mean, the cool thing about Mind Valley is those who teach are often those who needed it the most, which means that,
there's a story.
There's a story for sure. Right. So diving into the story, understanding, just the nightmare thing that usually triggered it. Usually it's a nightmare story that triggers the whole thing. And, again, it's about having lots of winning campaigns in your back pocket is really what it's about. It's about having lots of different ways to make a balloon animal and deciding which way, which balloon animal is this kid going to love, right? You know, kind of situation, right? So I have this big list of tricks in my back pocket. And then I'm like, yo, that sounds like this formula. You know, if I'm listening to like a girl who wants to be a princess, then I'm like, oh, that sounds like Sleeping Beauty. You're like this, so like I could like rewrite Sleeping Beauty or like something like that, where I've got all these like formulas in my back pocket. And then it begins like that. And then once I know how the storyline is going to go, or if we're selling an e-com product or a course, then I just know what flow would be the dopest, right? Mm-hmm. Let's tell the story like this. So I just chunk it out scene by scene. This is what it kind of looks like. You kind of like draw it on a whiteboard, how it would look, just like any sort of movie.
What do you think about now, like using tools like Midjourney and something like Pika, like editing tool to just kind of just do that with AI?
Yeah, so
text to video.
Using your tech to write the script and feeding it into Midjourney.
Yeah, I mean, boy, oh boy, wouldn't that be amazing to hit a button and have the real video made. But currently, like what actually prints is...
Or Matthew's technology.
Real footage, right? Real B-roll, right? Real footage, right? It's real, a real good script.
Were you listening to our previous episode recording enough to hear what Matthew was doing with HDR?
No.
So actually being able to capture digital likeness and then have the AI simulation basically deliver in essentially an indistinguishable way to you actually delivering on
Amen.
Video.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you think about like taking on a client through your technology, the AI learns about their product, it builds the script, you feed the script to the AI avatar, and there's your marketing campaign. Like that's a pretty incredible vision for the future of marketing.
Yeah,
from an efficiency point of view.
And even better than that, like it's just now here's 20 different ones. You know, 20 different things. Because the secret with VSLs is
from all of the different angles, so you can choose the best one.
All the best angles ever, right? The secret with VSLs is it's not the first VSL that changes your life; it's the 40th.
Yeah,
you know, it's the 40th version that really goes nuclear. Right. You just endlessly digging and endlessly solving each little challenges, running into each little blocker. And then
so you're testing every single version of the VSL.
Yeah. Because if you make 20 ads, one of them is going to be the most profitable. And you don't like
for sure.
Keep spreading your money. You put all the money on the most profitable one.
But is it the process usually that you go through or have done historically where you iterate? So you launch, see.
Yes.
Wow. And then you iterate, launch again.
Right. 100%. Yeah. I mean, my optimization flow is. One, grabbing attention. So the hook, the first 3 seconds, the first 60 seconds are usually the most important things to make sure you're grabbing attention.
Yeah.
And then once you have a bunch of eyeballs and you're in a niche that you know is big, so you're not selling something like cat tree construction plans to help grandmas create like trees for their cats to climb on, you're actually in a big niche that could work.
I don't want to say that. You said that so fluently. I feel like it's a client you've rejected.
Yeah. No, it's the first thing that I tried selling, right? So things you got to, lessons you got to learn. I'm not like, wow, come at this out of the game.
Not an ideas man, Peter.
No, it's just, you just try everything, right? You just hit the gas and fix the damage, right? What are my other models?
I could nail that.
Possibly. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but that's to happen when you don't think very much. You just kind of hit the gas really hard, right? I just also know the secrets of speed. Right. But so once I have a bunch of eyeballs on my video, right, and I'm in a niche that I know is proven to work, right, like proven problem, osteoporosis, once people are watching my stuff, right, they're not buying. Usually the first thing I would check is like what's called the unique mechanism. So everybody who buys everything is what I call hasn't seen the light in the tunnel. If they haven't bought, they don't see the light in the tunnel. They're stuck. They're overweight. Their skin is sagging. They're frustrated about this. Their husband's got a problem. They have a huge problem in their life or whatever. They don't see a way out. That's the key to it all, right? Mm-hmm. So the root cause of their problem is beginning to show them the way out. And the solution to solving that is now what I call the light in the tunnel. As soon as someone's in a dark space that makes them feel sad and hopeless, they see a light in the tunnel and they believe, I can get there. That's all they need. It's just a belief that I can make it to the other side. Other side is fucking bliss, feeling amazing, all the solutions, the benefits that you get.
Yeah.
Right. That's mostly it. People don't really care about the benefits. They care about the bullshit feelings that are happening right now. Right. Mm-hmm. It's the ground on fire that makes
they want to push away.
And the emotions. They want to get out of hell. Mm-hmm. Right. They want to get out of hell more so they want to prevent hell. Mm-hmm. Right. They always want to get out of hell. Mm-hmm. So the light in the tunnel is always the reason and the belief that they can make it through. right? Belief being injected through testimonials, which provides hope. The belief being projected through, right? Your clarity on the, not really the storytelling. The storytelling is what gets them to soak in everything.
But the individual, the talent who's, you know, the hero archetype that's basically saying, hey, I've been there. This was my journey.
Right.
How fundamental is that?
The story is fundamental because stories are the glue to keeping someone glued to everything that's going on there. Mm. Now, the light in the tunnel is not painted through story. The light in the tunnel is painted through the hero going, yeah, I was struggling, and then I discovered that the root cause of my problem is blah, or whatever, right? I'm not exercising there, my bones are breaking down, I'm missing a nutrient in my body, and all I had to do was supplement them on this little thing. And then all of a sudden, boom, dark root cause of the problem, solution. Testimonials, belief, possibility can get out of here. So then they take action. But usually it's if someone is not selling very well, it is because someone doesn't actually believe that they're going to get out of the light of the tunnel. They're not going to get out of this thing. That's really it. I mean, it's like, yeah, I'll buy that. That's, you know, when they say I'll buy that, that means they can see a light in the tunnel and a way out, right? It's not like the benefits that make someone say, I buy that. It's not this. It's me saying, right?
I believe this.
AI will rewrite your shit for you.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that makes sense. Right, it's like a light in the tunnel.
I can try and write this thing. Finally, by not doing it.
Oh my God. So it's like, it's it. Light in the tunnel. It's a big idea. They call it a big idea. They call it a unique mechanism. They call it the root cause of the problem. Yeah, but it's the way out. So everybody needs.
Yeah.
Right? I have PTSD. Explain to me how this is going to solve the root cause of my problem. Right? If that's clear and it makes sense.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I'm down. I'll try that.
So let's do a bit of a live workshop using Temple of Wholeness.
All right.
Yeah, maybe you begin by trying to define the light at the end of the tunnel for the prospective
person. Yeah, so what would be, to someone suffering with PTSD, what would be the root cause of their issue?
Trauma. Yeah, stress, trauma.
How was it? Can you describe it?
What happened?
It
varies for each individual, depending on what they experienced.
Yeah.
And we can use the example of vets, right? Having worked with so many vets, actually backing it up, most of them have childhood trauma, right? So there's actually imprints present that cause them to form in a way to then make particular choices that led them to combat, right? So then they're at combat and they're at war, they're fighting, and I can only imagine the amount of trauma and stress that would induce in someone to actually be in that position, right? So then they return. And unfortunately, these men who have devoted their lives to service end up damaged, you know, through the process and often discarded. They're not well cared for by like the VA, for instance. So then they end up living in a state of torture. Many of these men, I think the numbers last I heard was over 22 vets kill themselves each day, every single day. It's an astronomical number of men who take their lives, men and women who take their lives because of the torture that they're under from this PTSD. So,
is that torturing happening because a kitchen door is closing and a bit flash before their eyes?
That can be one thing that can trigger it.
So, but many things are triggering.
And
what's happening inside of them when this triggers?
Again, it's it's a bit of a challenging one to pigeonhole because there's so many nuances to it and everyone experiences it really differently.
Okay. So I would say when you're looking to identify your avatar, if we're going with military, it can be loud noises impacting your life. Children going to bed, waking up, playing in the next room, bothering you. Neighbor's car backfiring, and you identify a series of things and you start to bring in a group. And then from the group, they're going to experience it. Because right now, there's 10 classrooms going on. And as I speak, everybody's going to hear a little bit something different and certain things are going to resonate with them. So as you're looking to identify your client, you're going to want to take time to say, if these things impact you, we've had people have great results on the other side of that. Come get the solution here. And so that gives you the ability to really say military, police, firefighter, you've all been in a similar situation. If you're military, come this weekend. If you're a firefighter, come this weekend. If you're ex-police, come this weekend. And let's solve these issues for you.
Yeah. Well done.
One of the tools I like to use to help me clarify this when I'm selling a new problem, I call it the kindergarten simple pitch. So
great.
If I'm explaining to a child, right? Like I'm imagining there's a 5-year-old next to me and I'm explaining the light in the tunnel for someone with PTSD. So maybe I could try to work with it on you and see if I would get this clearly. So I'm like, okay, you're suffering from PTSD. Yeah. Well, you have these traumatic memories that when anything happens, there's like a link. It creates a link and then this pain fires all of a sudden. It's almost like a simple way to say what's going on.
Yeah.
Would that be accurate? Like what I just said there?
Yeah, that would be accurate.
Okay, cool. So that's the beginning of it. You got trauma. There's a link to a painful thing that happened that's causing all your problems. Right. So the solution to this, the way out of this is by taking Bufo, something breaks the link or releases that. So next time it closes, you won't experience that. How would you explain that?
Yeah, well, the different modalities that are available to support the metabolization of what's been held in the system. So there's like a stack attack that occurs, right? All these traumas stack on top of themselves. And then one ends up in a state where they are trigger sensitive. Anything can set them off. They're not resourced enough to be able to be present and be in the moment and responding appropriately, right? So a lot of emotionality and anger issues, et cetera. So there's a need to start to digest what's built up in the system. It's kind of like you've eaten all of these meals, but you haven't actually digested them. You can't keep taking in more information, more stimulus before you've actually taken care of what's present.
Okay.
So creating the space to actually come into this state of safety that would allow for vulnerability to be able to then take down some of those walls and access the walls that have been built to compartmentalize the trauma so that they can actually keep functioning through life. So we have to open up those compartmentalizations, bring them in to feel and allow for the somatic release through the body, right? Okay. Because there's...
Regulate the nervous system.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I was talking to the five-year-old again. I'm like, you have trauma because you have these things linked up in your head. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to, like, if we cut the cord, they're still in your head,
mm-hmm.
right? So what we need to do is digest them mm-hmm. almost and woe through them so it doesn't exist anymore, right? That way you'll not experience it anymore. The problem is they're all trapped, like digested, backed up stuff. So that is a clear light in the tunnel, mm-hmm. right? See, there's a way now it makes sense in a simple kindergarten, simple way for someone to get clarity on it. Like, oh my God, okay, that makes sense. It's still fucking trapped in me. How do I release it?
Yeah.
How do I digest it is the next stage of that light in the tunnel question.
Yeah.
The beautiful evolution is less is more. So when you're approaching somebody like a kindergartner and a lot of people who in the world we live in will get on Google and study the problem. We rarely study the solution. A friend of mine built a company around health where he went into the doctor and they said, you have an 87% chance of dying. And he goes, tell me about 13%. The doctor goes, I can't, never been taught on it. And he goes, so he created a company out of that need. So when somebody comes in with PTSD, asking them the questions, you know, let's say there's a 10 question questionnaire that are simple. Do these things bother you? Real simple, low hanging fruit. Five say yes. Great. Through coming to us, you're going to solve that. That's the easiest way to get to it. And then explain to them, we're going to do things that may not be normal for you that will get you back to a normal life. And that a kindergartner will say, oh, like if you're supposed to clean your room, but the vacuum is too heavy, you just need somebody to help you carry the vacuum up the staircase. That's a very simple thing. But if you're a five-year-old, you're like, it's down there. I don't know what to do. Oh my gosh. And they're in this fight or flight and they just don't know how to solve that situation. Be like, oh my gosh, we carry vacuums every day of the week. We are your solution. We'll see you soon. Sign up here. And you make it so simple and so silly that they're just like, click, that's it. Take my money. You know, and so always evolve in the simplest, shortest path outside of the VSL pay to play. It's simply, how do I create a message that is at the five-year-old level so simple and less is more in the biggest way? So, because when you're using systemic and, oh my gosh.
This is what happens with founders. Yeah. You know, they're so entrenched in the subject matter, you know.
Yeah. With one of the things is people ask me, how did you get into what you do? For a decade, I owned a tree and landscaping service. Yeah, what do I do? I do a lot of things. So I'll pick one as particular. This is the osteoporosis and osteostrong. So 13 years ago, I met a guy that went like this. Nerd, 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 science, 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 nerd, bones. And I was like, you will never build a company because he was so smart and so passionate that he couldn't speak English. And at that time, I was literally a lumberjack. And so I'm sitting here like, now the product makes sense. Both of my grandmothers had an osteoporotic side effect to where the medication or something else took their lives toward the end of their life where my one grandmother had polio. She couldn't create weight bearing on her body. So her bones fell apart. So I understood when he said nerd, 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 science, 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 bones, that if my grandma was able to have used this technology, she would have strengthened her bones and had a different life. So I was like, that makes sense. Shortly after that, one of the greatest entrepreneurs I've ever interacted with came on board
and looked at the company and said, okay, you can't speak nerd and science to people anymore. I'm going to speak English. And the message is continuously being tailored. So once it becomes simpler and simpler and simpler, we can go to anybody. And this is where asking the question on an intake form is important. If somebody comes to me and they're like, my 98-year-old grandmother, I'm telling a different story than an 18-year-old sports player. So an athlete needs to hit his peak and hit a new personal record, we tell a story. So when you have a military person come in or a firefighter who got trapped inside a building and thought he was going to die and then a tree fell on the side of it and oxygen and air came and he walked out, like you're dealing with a different person. So find the way to create the simplest form to tell the message. So the message went from nerd, 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 science, 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 to we have a proven technology in 11 countries with 185 locations with 10 million sessions completed. And after our most recent study, we increased bone density by 15% on average after 9 months using our technology. Come see us 10 minutes a week for the greatest solution known to man. And so now people go, oh, that makes sense. But if I go back and nerd, 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 science, 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 like you, the systemic, the whole thing, most people are like, I don't know what that means. How do I get there? So backing
it's all overwhelming to interact with the solution that it is to keep the problem. And yeah. I think that that's...
Well, we've been taught that this is my problem. And the main thing we have to identify is like starting these campaigns. Yes, you have to say, are you ready to move through this? Because so many people, I've dealt with clients where they'll send me 5 or 6 figures. They're ready to move or we're ready to move forward. And they start talking this story. And I'm like, all right, are we ready to move through that? And they're like, well, yeah, but... And I'm like, oh, God. Because I know that when their nervous system fights their intention, the nervous system wins because it regulates. I want to move forward. I want to do this. I want to do this. But you haven't for a decade. I haven't for a decade. A lot of people are, you know, we become obsessed with learning every single intricacy of the problem versus the solution. So asking the question, if you're ready for the solution, if you've experienced this problem, we're going to take you out the other side of it. Boom. And then you just sit there in silence because the person who speaks next loses. So it's like, you ready to solve this? And if he knows that he wants the other side of it, his answer is, yeah. And it may take a little while, you know, and that's what you want to get to with a customer experience is the shortest piece to get an emotional response to get them to click that button.
A really amazing tool is called the FK score, the Fleshian-Killian score. And what this is, it analyzes this your...
It's absolutely barbaric.
Yeah,
it is, but it makes money. So pay attention.
Yeah.
Right?
Taking notes.
It makes money, right? So you just take your copy, and I do this. I write a campaign, and then I throw it through this every single time. And it just analyzes what reading level your copy is. Right? Mm. Anything above a 6.5 is too big brain, right? Like, especially for his demo, right? 50-year-old plus, we are talking about kindergarten simple, everything. So this will analyze, this sentence is too long, this word is too big, this is too that, and you have to rewrite your advertising. If you look at one of Donald Trump's speeches, it is literally third grade speaking level.
Yes.
Unbelievable, this skill set, right? Just the skill set. People, you cannot write anything that he's saying. It's so simple and so mass market understandable, which is really the trick is simplicity, simple words, right? Yeah. Not like gymnast linguistic language patterns, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's like the light in the tunnel is the hope that somebody has. And one of the biggest reasons that gets messed up is they just don't understand because the systematic word fucking threw them out.
Yeah.
L. Ron Hubbard talks about like one of the reasons why people don't understand something is just because. Yeah, he's got one line where he says
Peter
the only reason.
A Scientologist officially on The Global Affair.
I tried joining, but they kicked me out. They wouldn't let me join.
But, tried to market this shit for them.
He's got some wisdom by saying the only reason people get confused is they don't understand a word, right? Mm-hmm. You came across a word you didn't understand, and now you're fucking lost, right?
I also think that in terms of what you're doing, you're speaking to someone's inner child as well, right?
Once you got up the ranks of Scientology, that would have been really hard to understand.
I got a good Scientologist, yeah, but we can leave it out.
Wait, I don't want to.
I could call some entertaining public figures to have that conversation.
I want to anchor in this point because I think, I think that this is, you know, it's not a pain point that entrepreneurs have that is, you know, going to be news to anyone. I think every founder and entrepreneur, especially technical founders, you know, that are so in what they are creating, have really lost the ability in many ways to kind of simplify, nut down. And I think, you know, one of the intentions we had for this episode for the listeners is to take away something really tangible And I mean, there's something illuminating in this for me, just the power of simplification and really bringing the messaging back to the fundamental basics. And actually, what I'm getting from this conversation is that's an act of generosity for those that need to hear it.
Mm.
You know, and often we want to share our passion, we want to share our wisdom,
yeah.
We want to give all the answers now. But that person is in, as Peter's described, a vulnerable state. They're already overwhelmed. You know, it's got to be accessible to them. And that's our job when marketing our solution.
Yeah, I've definitely learned a lot from the exchange here. And it's interesting because I've never thought this way before. I've actually never tried to sell, tried to get customers. It's been a continuous trail of referrals. So the people I serve sell it for me. So yeah. They have an experience. It's so powerfully transformative. And they go to their lives.
Word of mouth is a powerful way to market.
Right. Well, then if the people experience the significant shift in them and start asking, what happened to you? What did you do to change so rapidly, you know, in the state that we're experiencing? Or they have the experience where they want everyone who matters in their life that they love so deeply to have this experience that they can transform with them. So I've never had to think this way. And it's interesting. It's really good food for thought, and this is what's now coming forward. So I'm appreciating the wisdom and simplicity.
Yeah. One of the things that I see for broadening for a founder is to remember not to market to themselves. Because if I want a blue car and it's
because we're so hard to sell to, that's the truth.
That and if I particularly want a blue car and I tell everybody about my experience with the blue car, but they like silver cars, then I've missed my entire audience. And so we try to sell to the experience and the motion of what we have ourselves, and we miss our audience all the freaking time. So that's where going to your audience and asking them what they like best and reading it, taking the time. Like I have a friend who had a company for 8 or 9 years. He put this energy out on all of his videos, all of his content, everywhere. And he's like, this sucks. The market shifted and everything was bad. And it was always somebody thinking. And I said, I have a question. When was the last time you asked your audience why they bought? So he sent out a letter to 1,000 of his customers or whatever it ended up being. And like 90% of them said one thing. And he's like, I never would have thought that. And I just sat there and stared at him. And he goes, yeah, everything you said is right. I said, I'm not here to be right. I'm here to say that they're right. They're right. Yeah, it's good that I am today. And he took that 90%. He tailored his entire message and shifted it just a little bit. And they went 300% the next month in sales. So it was the fact that he was stopped talking to himself, stopped selling himself. And he started selling to the customers that bought because that was his direct avatar. And he learned literally in that moment that by him communicating in their language pattern at a kindergarten level, it exploded.
That's awesome. Let's just spend the last segment of this episode talking about the future of marketing specifically and exclusively. And Peter, one of the questions I have is, what was the algorithm or algorithms that have been built into your technology? What were they based on?
So what we're building at Viasala AI is built on top of GPT-4, as we're built on. Pretty amazing world-class engine. And from there, all we really had to do was like discover how to actually do prompt engineering. And really what we have are just some really dope advanced prompts that are pretty long, right? So they're very plug and play, very dynamic, and you're able to switch them out. So it was less of like, you know, specific algorithms and more like, I have a big winning script. How do I really chunk this each scene down into something that the AI can understand what it is? How do I give it a formula that it can follow?
I think it speaks to the power of AI, just following on from our last conversation as well, you know, the ability to process huge amounts of data and look at the synergies and patterns between things. When you were explaining the product, it's epic, you know, as you were doing in an analog way, take a bunch of different case studies of the best-selling advertisements in the past, learn the product, and then the AI is able to produce something that I think you referred to it as a money printer for your company.
Just a good idea, right?
It's
great. It gives you a good idea.
Yeah.
Worth a try. It gives you a worth a try idea. It's worth testing that idea and making it.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, there's many marketers that are now looking at ways of innovating the space and kind of optimizing the space. Of course, right? Do you have kind of a vision or predictions of how this is going to move in the next 5 to 10 years?
Okay, so at least 3 years. It's over in 3 years. I mean, God only knows where we're at in 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So in 3 years, everything will be linked up where, right, your you will be able to go on BSL to AI and have a video made that sells your product better than anything you've ever created. And it just organizes all your video, does the voiceover, even maybe works with a spokesperson. And you just have a world-class
all
video.
Or your digital likeness.
Of what?
Or your digital likeness.
Somebody, right? The authority figure. Whoever's the spokesperson for the brand will be able to show up and immediately say a world-class video with world-class B-roll, with world-class showing of the light in the tunnel and the unique mechanism and testimonials and everything, right? And that'll be linked to your Facebook, Google accounts. So it'll immediately go inside here and it'll media buy for you. And then it'll come back to your account and it'll know, hey, how well this variation tested and how well the introduction is. Oh, the introduction was actually messed up. So it'll automatically go and generate
a
better
introduction. I love that this is just saved, like just that short, like just we're not even through it. That's like a $200,000 churn off, you know, a small startup's monthly output every month. It's unbelievable.
So you'll be able to do that. And then of course do like, you know, that 20 times at a time, right? Through 20 different ad variations or more. I mean, God only knows, right? But eventually it'll all be connected, right? And then eventually the AI won't even need people to like run the thing anymore. You know?
And then they'll be like, I don't even like this product. Why are we marketing these products and replicating ourselves?
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be a wave of fake celebrities and deep fake celebrities and a wave of like the black hat people coming in and trolling this technology or all technology in the advertising world. You know, this is a huge win for the black hat world for sure. And it's a huge win for the white hat world too. So it is just this evolution that we're coming into right now.
How do you see, I mean, you may not have thought about this, but you know, the launch of WorldCoin was recently and Sam Altman's start the world coins and like
As soon as we said world coin
soundtrack.
I'm not following it too much.
So basically it's kind of a step towards a prospective UBI.
Okay.
Right. So we're potentially moving into a world where income is kind of just universal.
Yeah.
Then we have this like epically growing capacity to sell things, but potentially a system economically that doesn't support that level of consumerism anymore.
Have you seen the big like silver ball that's like scanning your iris?
I've seen the silver ball. I've definitely heard a lot of talks about jobs being lost at a way faster rate than we can get new jobs.
Yeah.
Right. For sure. Yeah. So,
but even just, just the income bracket being
universal.
Capped, you know? So if we have more sales ability than ever before,
right.
But people, I don't know. Like, this is literally a question I'd like to explore. I don't have a thought on this.
I definitely don't think that advertising is going to die for sure because people are too broke to be able to afford anything anymore. I don't think so. I mean, they're going to have their Apple VR goggles for sure. Right? Living in their VR world, dope as hell, right? So they're going to like, you know, they're going to have a cool life and they're going to have serious health issues for sure. Health is going to get a
big enough. It might just like shift from real life products to digital products entirely, virtual products.
Right.
No, I'm not worried about the world being too broke. I mean, that's for sure. There's always going to be people who have standards for sure and decide that they're going to live without pain in their back or they're going to solve an issue or they're going to get back their fitness back. You know, I mean, the truth about like, you know, why, let's just say the fitness industry, right? It's been around since the dawn of humans, right? And it's never going to go away. And the money is not about inventing a new way to help people lose weight or get in shape. The money is inspiring people to get back in shape, right? That's why a lot of things, that's why like saturation doesn't actually exist in that world because people get off a product and they want to try it 2 weeks later because they forgot about it. Before I got a minute. So it's always about re-inspiring people to get back on what they know is like. Yeah. So I just don't, I feel pretty confident in ads
continuing to sell
continue to use it
at an exponential rate.
Facebook,
especially
Google,
as it being more targeted because we just the amount of data and analytics that's available it's just becoming even more crazy.
It's gonna get crazy, but you can't get too carried away.
I believe that when you said 5 or 10 years of advertising / marketing / the world we live in, one of the most under recognized quotes of our day today is AI or die, because there are companies, like a friend of mine laid off 15 researchers because he hired two people for about $1,000 a month to run questions through ChatGPT that are doing a better job than 15 researchers would. And so when you see people getting, you know, rid of jobs, that's why it's more efficient and it's saving money and it's building the business, and the business is not to have fun, it's to make money. And then the next side of that is most things that we've learned about in our lifetime are eras. There is no AI era. There's before, now, and done. Like the shift of it. When you said, you know, to Peter, 10 years, he was like, three? Because it's happening so fast. And so it's kind of buckle up, hang on, and learn it. Or you're either going to be a designer and have the infrastructure that has users and data, or you're going to be a user. And that's it. There's those two sides of the AI world. And I personally, up until April, thought AI was going to take over the world and was one of the worst things ever. And then I was on the phone with my legal team, and my light came up was my legal team said 30 days to deploy a contract. And I was like, that's unacceptable. And he said, I'll charge you double. And I'd watched a video that morning. I wake up sometimes, watch a poker video or a bass fishing video, two things that I enjoy. And after that was ChatGPT. I'm like, click, you know, the morning scroll. And it was about 7 minutes, 38 seconds, watch it. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Put a prompt in, define it, give it some framework, and you can do it. So took a 3.5-page contract, copied it, pasted it into ChatGPT, first time using it ever, put about 4 sentences. I want this legally binding. I'm going to acquire this company. The seller's solvent. Please have an initial and date there. Anything in the state of acquisition, please have the proper stuff. Put it in a numeric order with bullet points. Bam. 9 pages kicked out in 60 seconds. Send it to the lawyer. The lawyer said, and he was like, how'd you do this? And I was sitting there like, like, I just became this big gangster in the space where moments earlier, he's like, 10 grand will finish it. 20 grand will get it done sooner. Yeah, it faded. It faded quickly. Yeah, it faded quickly. And so that is my interface, right? Yeah, I went from, 1-800 fuck it all in. And so those are transitions that are happening all over the world every day, every moment. That's it. Men like me everywhere. Sign up now. Yeah. So, but there will be no era of AI. There will just be stories of handwritten books and then kindergartners writing their books because they're talking to something that tailors it off. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the most unique time humanity's ever engaged with technology because it's doing better than we can currently in the speed we can. Not that the overall picture, like, to be clear, AI didn't write you didn't write your book. AI did. So it took framework of other things and gave you framework of what people might want, and it tailored it as a sales device. Cool. An individual's not experienced that book. There's been no AI feature that, like, I know people are like, I have an AI book. I'll get it, read the first chapter. I'm like, that's not a person. Like, there's so many little intricacies missing. The emotion will get better, but we're going to go from a human world of engagement to a digital world of engagement. We're losing pieces of humanity every day. From the fact that 15 people are laid off immediately to the fact that industries will disappear. Like there's a logistics company that had 400 employees and they're getting rid of 350 because they integrated an AI that made it more efficient for logistic tracking.
You can just have a chief AI officer now.
Yeah, pretty much. There goes a third of your staff.
Yeah. Well, it's very hopeful.
Hey.
Oh, it is. It actually
new professions. You know, people never thought that they could make money being influencers or, you know, create content. Right. So it's
going back to our previous episode, you know, I think Gregory's point around in order for us to really take this responsibility seriously, we need the space to awaken. And I think, maybe an invitation to anyone that is a listener who's in an industry that is potentially not going to be in existence soon or you've been laid off, you know, because of this acceleration, is there an invitation there for you to really seek something a lot deeper and be, as you would say, Sana, as an author of your story in a new way. And I think, you know, pain pushes and there is very exciting opportunity if we were to take a step back from the fear and look at the invitation that's kind of imminent there for so many people.
Yeah, I'm going to paraphrase something that happened recently for the numeric side of it, but there was a gentleman who did graphic work very lately over the years for me. He passed away about a year and a half ago during COVID, and his family reached out and said, can we have money? And I replied back, does anybody there have a current skill set? They said, no. And myself and a previous person that bought the graphics, simple light graphics were created by this gentleman, but he worked really hard and he was very diligent. I really respect that because some people are just like, give me money. He's like, how do I do work for you and add value? And so two of the family members went in and started using AI, and they're now generating $500 a month, which is probably about $200,000 to $250,000, $500 to $600 a week of US cash in Sri Lanka is about $200,000 to $250,000 a year income, because they integrated and learned 3 AI platforms in the last month, and now they're able to cash flow. And they were worried about losing their house, their family. They have like 15 people that live in a 1500 square foot house, literally. And so the technology has both sides. It's going to take things away, but it's also going to benefit. And it's creating a level of freedom and lifestyle that that entire community and that entire village didn't know was possible. And two people out of a couple hundred people are lightly touching the surface and adding value to people in other markets. So like, that's the beautiful side of things, is where technology is able to bring people together. Like, I never met somebody from Sri Lanka over the internet. So this graphic designer says, this is where I'm from, this is what's going on, this is how I live. And I ask these questions because you never know who you're dealing with. And so this story of devastation and loss and my question and another person's question, and they spent more time in engaging, now has them there and they're not working very much. So I was like, imagine if you work more. And they're like, that's such an American concept. I said, I understand that. But if you work a little bit more, from 10 to 20 hours a week as the two siblings in the house, you can bring in $50,000, which is $500,000, and you can impact your community. When they grasp that idea and concept, they're looking at wells, they're looking at other things. So the evolution of the standard of democratizing humanity and being able to bring and create some equality to income barriers is coming to the table for the first time through AI. And I never would have had that question if I didn't step into the world ending because of AI and using the technology and getting that experience to be able to learn something myself and ask that question and give this family an opportunity that without their father was the sole income earner for like 15 people, 3 generations, is now able to come back up and not only survive, but thrive in an environment where a simple application, a very light touch application, is going to change a community. So like, it has its beauty, it has its darkness, and we have a serious responsibility right now because I have 3 children. People are parents. People are grandparents. People are going to be having children. And what we do every single day with this technology will create the future for them every moment. Like right now, people are making decisions that will shape the future.
Well said. This has been a wonderful discussion, by the way.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Amber, Tim, Peter, and of course, Sanaz, for hosting us.
Man.
Any final thoughts that anyone has?
Hey, if you're struggling with your digital footprint, and you know, Amber and I, we discussed this, please contact us. We can form a club on how to cultivate an authentic presence online. I know you mentioned, you know, having the eyeballs is important and attention is important. I just don't want to be selling lipsticks and underwear.
Yeah,
exactly. Imagine if Jesus never got any attention.
Would Jesus be on Instagram? Would Jesus be an influencer? I've been asking this question.
Standing in front of the crowd. He's got the biggest audience.
If he was walking
ever
on water, he would definitely be viral.
Somebody would have their videos.
The guy's literally walking on water for attention. Okay? You know what I mean? What a
crazy question. Would he get drowned out, though? Would he get drowned out? Like, how would Jesus have attention right now?
I mean, the guy wears a miracle worker, right? Isn't that, if you're a miracle worker, you got skills, you bring some value to the table, you get attention, right?
That, like, I would definitely watch that 40-minute video ad. Yeah.
The SL Jesus.
You know what I mean?
I would be glued to the screen.
I don't think he'd be impressive at this time. People are doing really impressive things online.
I mean, if there's one person walking on water, I mean,
that's okay. Downplaying Christ here on the podcast. Yes.
You're one of those, like, people commenting, like, come on.
Yeah, come on now.
Everyone can walk on water. Yeah, no. I mean, like, I do feel like there is a stigma around attention, you know, and think of having it bad to be attention, you know, like, it's, and I just feel like the absolute opposite is true. A leader must have eyes on him and must be showing how it's done. And it's your job to get in front of people.
It's your
and get their attention.
Job to demonstrate.
Right. It's every post, even though it's a post of you, is not about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's about you influencing them.
Yeah.
Right. All of materialism isn't about you. It's about it's matter
driven by materialism, right? Yeah. The kids look at the Lambo and then now you can throw wisdom in their mouth.
Yeah. Right? You really shifted my perspective on this, like since I started talking to you last night. So I really am grateful for that.
Boom.
Because I had a very like dystopic view of like getting attention, but you reframed that in my mind. So I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. And in the last 48 hours has brought to my attention that it's selfish that when you learn a lesson and you're in a position of authority not to share, because you're costing them the pain of experiencing it themselves. And a lot of times in society, we find ways to share, to get attention, not to get attention, and it's for the wrong reason. And then you end up doing it for nothing. And in the last 48 hours, I was really challenged to just start sharing my life experiences, because there's a lot of them where I can help people skip the pain. And they can go through parts of the lesson, but they don't have to go as deep and have all the pain. And I was like, wow. This is now not only an opportunity, but a responsibility. And that shifted me in the last 48 hours. And that was wild for me. Because I was like, I think I know what I'm going to do this way. And then all of a sudden I was like, and not only am I wrong, but it gave me the ability to create a new truth in that. And that was pretty wild, because I was like, I'm pretty stuck in this way. And then they're like, here's the evolution. I was like, I'm going to step into the evolution. I'm going to do something new.
That's you're reflecting a shift that I began to experience just in our conversation before starting as well, when you mentioned that. So I appreciate that. And I'm taking that in deeply. And I think you're right. It's important that those that actually have a clear signal to broadcast that pierces through all of the noise is important. And we do need that. So
yeah, if you're a light, you got to get the eyeballs on you, you know, 100%. Mm-hmm. Or else why are you a light?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What do you actually need?
Love that we got a consensus. All right. Thank you so much. And listeners, of course, thank you for listening to The Global Affair. Please share with a friend that you know is struggling with these conversations at the moment. And we'll see you next episode. Thank you for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed the show, please let us know by leaving a review or sharing the episode with someone you love and expanding this conversation as far and wide as possible. If you're looking for a community to have conversations with about global affairs, please jump in our Telegram group or join our free think tanks. Thanks for being a part of the shift towards a love-based civilization. We'll see you in the Telegram group or in the next episode.